Eric Stromples. Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings video cast and podcast for the week ending November 13th, 2016. This is the place where we talk about all things smart controls, HVAC controls, building automation controls. If it's got a C in it, we'll probably talk about it. So, but hey, talk is cheap unless you are joined by your co-host and my co-host, the smartest guy in the room, the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers, the control guy, paddle tennis playing, lover of women and children, poet, writer. I mean, I could go on and on, but it would take the whole show. Kenny Smyers. Kenny, welcome to the show. The big dog.
Well, thank you very much, Eric. And I'll tell you what, I think that time you actually, that might be your new highest, loftiest precedent introduction yet. No, things are going good. Another great week in Control Trends. I tell you, we're inching towards that January 29th date. It's just really, really exciting because the nomination period is in full flux and there's just tremendous inputs from around the world. And we get a lot of the veterans in our industry participating, so that's good to see. And what about you? We're in crispy autumn weather here. We're waiting for this first snowfall. It could have snowed this morning. It was cold enough.
And, I tell you what, it's so beautiful here. And for our audience out there, I am in super, super mellow mode. Anna has taken the two kids and they've gone to visit Anna's grandmother who turns 95 on Evelyn's birthday. So they have the same birthday. She's never met Evelyn or Axel. So they're out of town. I got the house to myself, feeling like a bachelor again, man. I tell you what, I've hadn't cleaned the kitchen. I hadn't made the bed. I've been just down here playing with videos and stuff like that. But I tell you what, Kenny, it is gorgeous down here. It's cool. The sun's out. You know, as a photographer, there's something about the autumn light. There's just a warm softness to it that is just sort of exquisite. So when we get done here, I'm going to probably take off with the camera and head downtown and snap some pictures. So I am super, super happy about the weather. And although I miss my wife and children, sometimes it's just good to take a break, right? You know, so.
Well, it sounds good. Sounds like you're doing some of that spiritual healing stuff that you always talk about there, huh?
Well, yeah, spiritual, but you can't do the Marvin Gaye thing. You know, what was that song? One of my favorites back in the day, sexual healing. So we'll have to do that a little later on, man. You say, uh-oh. Before I do. But you know, Kenny, but you're right, man. We're getting closer to the Control Trends Awards. And I tell you what, it's exciting times. And the nomination ballots, we're getting all kinds of new people. You know, as you know, with the nomination period, you can write in up to three additional products, companies, categories. And we are finding all kinds of cool new people, products and companies. So it's exciting this year. And I tell you what, it's kind of interesting. Let me ask you, I sort of like there's a feel that, you know, this is going to be our fifth one. And everybody just seems to sort of just be like, I don't know, super mellow mode or something. I just don't feel the energy necessary around it that, you know, we felt in the past, you know, this time of year. So I'm sure it'll pick back up. But we got the sponsors are rocking and rolling. As a matter of fact, let's acknowledge our platinum sponsors for the week. What do you say?
Sure. Well, our first platinum sponsor of the week is DG Logic. And you know, these guys have just been you asked me a kind of a question about mellowness and about everything. I think it's just, you know, it's the cycles. It's what happens is you can't sustain, you know, an enormous energy, you know, over so much time. So we're seeing a flux. What we're seeing is happening is a lot of the, the staunch, most familiar, usual suspects probably are caught up in so many things that are going on that it's the smaller, more nimble corporations that we're working with, manufacturers, vendors, and solutions providers that, you know, they're coming out as excited as the very first day. You know, this is their baptism. This is their introduction to the building automation industry. And, so while the one is a seesaw, so the one side's getting kind of, you know, mellow and slow and you know, business as usual, the other side's looking at this as a unique and exciting opportunity to get their solutions and their products out in front of the Control Trends community. So it's actually a kind of a good thing because you can't fit them all in at the same time sometimes. You know, it's just, there's just so much going going on. There's so much disruption. I mean, we talk about the elections disrupting, you know, business as usual, and we talk about, you know, technology, IoT disrupting these stable businesses are now all of a sudden fighting for their lives.
Well, hang on. You're saying a lot here. I want to unpack some of this stuff. So I think you're absolutely right. So I'll give you an example. You know, our friend Dan Flaherty is over at Distech now, which is part of Acuity Brands. I mean, they are all over it, man. They're so excited. I got a call from Ryan and a couple of people at Distech. I'm actually going to Acuity, Kenny, for the first time next week. Going to be doing an interview over there with them, and they're so excited to show the Control Trends community. They've got a wall with their integration, their Distech stuff. So you look forward to that next week. So that's exciting stuff. But I do want to just you use the E word. So I think we got to talk about it. But my question for you is, it seems like whether you agreed with the current administration's politics or not, it seems like they were really good for energy conservation and therefore really good for smart building controls. My question for you, and I don't track politics at all, okay? I don't know anything about it. But my question for you, do you see a change with that? Or you think it's, in other words, with Trump being elected, could that hurt the controls industry vis-a-vis the sort of energy mandates that...
No, I don't think so at all. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see, I think they've already changed some of the czars out. The EPA czar and some of the other people are already earmarked for replacement. And I think we're going to see a resurgence in our resource pursuits. We're going to see more. We're going to see the coal industry, I think, come alive again a little bit there, especially in West Virginia. They sure could use an economic perk, you know, and there's just different ways that you can get to the same results but still paying careful and due diligence to the environment and making sure we're keeping the carbon footprint as small as possible and reducing it at every occasion. But I think what you're going to see is you're going to see the opportunities to move the checkers on the checkerboard to get different results. You know, the end of the game is we need, you know, the economy has to get some excitement in it. It has to be energized. We saw there was a news guy on today, this morning, a gentleman from Britain that led the, they're kind of, you know, their disruption to their, you know, dropping out of the EC. The guy that engineered that was on talking about the Brevex, you know, the Brit X, whatever that was. And he said, this is going around the world. There was news this morning, too, that 200,000 people were out there protesting in Seoul, Korea. So I think what's happening is you're seeing just a whole disruption thing. It's like that pendulum we talked about. It is coming into a us moment where the people want to be heard again. They just feel as though they were so distant and you know disparate to the people making decisions, and to have all those poll monsters be so incorrect and people that were judging their making decisions based on the information they were getting from the pollsters were dead wrong. And so
that's a great example, Kenny, of bad data analytics, right?
Well, that just shows what social media did. You know, one guy's out there free he's tweeting every day and getting millions and millions of people either saying, you know, I hate what you just said there, or, you know, rah, rah, rah. But the whole point was that social media had a bigger impact and Twitter had a bigger impact than the New York Times, you know? So I think, you know, so as we continue to discuss what's going on in our business, and we see a direct parallel, we're running side by side with the rest of the world with a lot of other issues where there's just a different, means of conveying information.
Right.
Back to the energy question is, I think we're going to see a redoubled investment in energy-related industries.
Let me just tell you something that I noticed, because, you know, I trade, so that means I'm, you know, watching the markets a good bit. So Trump gets elected, the Dow, I think, has gone up, you know.
Record
highs on the Dow, but NASDAQ has gone absolutely the other way, okay? And, you know, one of the stocks I track and follow is Tesla, which, you know, we talk a lot about Tesla and their effect on the environment and so on and so forth. Tesla's gotten hammered since Trump's gotten in. So I have no doubt that, like you said, the checkerboard will be, things will be moved around, right? And I remember when Reagan came in, you know, back in the day, you probably do too. I mean, military, that was where the money was being spent. I mean, we got more business from military bases. They were, you know, upgrading and so on and so forth. So I have no doubt that, you know, our industry will fare well no matter what. My question, you know, again, sort of gets back to, and again, sort of just tracking the NASDAQ stocks, which have a lot to do with, you know, solar energy and Tesla and stuff like that, and sort of seeing what's happened to them since the announcement of Trump, and then looking at the Dow stocks. So to your point, I mean, oil and gas will probably do really well again. U.S. industries, the Dow's made up of the 30 components of, you know, U.S. companies that are, you know, sort of like the IBMs and stuff like that. So if the market's any indication, the market at least is betting that, you know, the American companies there in the Dow are going to do really good. The technology companies, I mean, Amazon has just gotten hammered, Kenny. I mean, it's down maybe 120, 130 points last time I checked. So could that mean that sort of the way the internet's going and stuff like that, internet sales, could there be something that we don't know yet that's going to affect people like Amazon and maybe some of the companies that in our industry that are internet only sales? It's probably too soon to tell, but
they're corrections. I think Tesla is going to be, you know, the future. I wouldn't get rid of my stuff yet. I think what's happened is it is going to find a baseline. It's going to find a bottom. But there's no doubt that what Tesla's doing in that battery and the solar, that's the future. You know, just it's how long can you wait for the future? Like the future is here now, but it's not evenly distributed. You know, so what's happening is we're seeing different industries are going to get rewarded faster. And like you said, too, the some of the political promises that were made have to come to fruition or to be not a good thing, because I mean it was some of the platform based people voted based on those promises. But I think, you know, to your point, I think that the Amazons, you know, the big IT people, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, all those intangibles, you know, those ethereal companies that don't have, you know, or Amazon, I'm sorry, does have a lot of assets, but I think they lose money every week or whatever, right? It's hard to follow. Well, it's hard to understand. I mean, how can somebody be so enormous and keep growing and swallow up all these other businesses and yet lose money week over week? But I think Tesla's a different story. I think Tesla's the future. And I think the sooner you can get involved in the future, the better off you're going to be. I think you'll be, I think 10 years from now, you look back and say, you know, I did everything right and that this was going to work out. But for the immediate future, which is more, you know, reactive to the day-to-day situations and situations like we just had where you have political promises that have to be kept, I think you're going to see those checkers that we saw. You can't have any more checkers added yet. You know, I think if the businesses feel as though it's time to invest money and they're going to get breaks on taxes or whatever, this gentleman from Britain said that, you know, and America has the ability to surge so quickly, no other country can do it. They can bring hundreds of millions of dollars to play like that if they feel good. If people feel good about what they're doing, they feel positive about their future, that spirit can carry the economy. And then everybody starts buying big at Christmas and the retails, you know, all these indicators are showing favorable, you know, starts. So, but I think, you know, in the long run, you got Tesla is going to be a very good investment because we have no choice. Ultimately, we're going to see those technologies that Johnson's working, where every building is going to go to DC, and you're going to start, you know, zero energy. You're going to start collecting energy and putting in your own batteries, providing your own energy needs, and actually have the opportunity to put that back into the grid. So I think that's coming, but that's a slower march. You know, that's not going to be immediate, and you will feel as though, you know, they're going to go down to their baselines. I think so. Amazon and some of the other big players that, you know, are taking, you know, some of the wind out of their sails, it's not going to, you know, the sail didn't get smaller. It just doesn't have enough wind in it to, you know, make everybody happy.
I think that's why they call you the man, the myth, the legend. So, hey, real quick, because you've put that very succinctly. So I've performed my first hack, my first IT hack. Fred Gordy, you'd be so proud of me. It actually was kind of dumb luck. So I had, you remember what, 4 or 5 years ago, remember we did the video where I actually installed the Nest thermostats in my house in town?
Sure did.
And of course, you know, I got my 5-year anniversary from them. They've never updated the fact I sold the house 2 years ago. The Nest thermostats are still in there. So I still get the energy reports on the house. So now I realize I can turn their stuff on and off if I want to. So the question is, and the control trans community can reach out in comments, should I turn their heating and air conditioning on and off? Should I be like a black hat? Fred Gordy, you need to weigh in on this for me, buddy. So, all right, enough of that silliness, Kenny. Let's get back to our sponsors, man.
All righty. Let's just start with DG Logic. And again, the synopsis on DG Logic is they had some very exciting things happen, but they're still doing business as usual. They're a San Francisco-based company that provides probably the most innovative software solutions that enable the visualization of IoT, the Internet of Things. So the modern IoT illustrates through the customizable applications and dashboards that allow the users to easily interact with various sets of data from various devices and derive more value and intelligence to manage cost and energy to derive the greatest efficiency. So these guys are very, very high tech. They've been pushing the data around from the very beginning. And I think the fusion or the integration they have now, the opportunity for the synergies, and they're led by a very, very smart guy, Eugene Mazza, who he's been big time presence in the control trends categories for, small executive of the year for a small corporation. He's in the PID. He's a very likable guy and he works very hard. Now he's just, really got the opportunity to grow the DG Logic concept and synthesize with greater technologies, because you and I both know that he really believes in this IoT and how you can, there's so much data that can produce so much more value if you can get to it and present it in the most, in the people that are making business decisions from this perspective, people that are making the CFOs is paying bills from this perspective. And what DG Logic does is it serves that up, tees it up for them to hit a really nice drive and make the best decision at the time. So well done, DG Logic.
DG Logic is really cool. And Kenny, I tell you what, I got a Trivial Pursuits question for our audience. The first three people that reach out in comments and answer this question will get tickets to the Control Trends Awards, okay? Here is the trivial question. Eugene Mazza and his team, Kenny and I dubbed them with a moniker, if you will. We call them the men in something. And the first three people that answer that correctly in comments will get tickets to the 2016 Control Trends Awards in Las Vegas. So that being said, Kenny Smyers, tell us about our next sponsor.
Our next sponsor is Vicon. We all know Vicon. I think you said Ed Martin was the grandfather of, building integration as we know it,
The godfather. Don't call Ed Merwin a grandfather. He'll beat both of us if we do that.
That must have been a Freudian slip there. Sorry, Ed. I didn't mean grandfather, but he is a grandfather.
You want to tell some of one of your daughters? Are you and Rita getting ready to be grandparents, Mr. Freud?
Not yet.
Okay. Hint, Sabrina and Samantha.
Brendan, yeah. Well, I think, and Stephanie, yeah, but I think Sabrina we better edit that point too, probably. But anyhow, slippage there. Sorry, let's take two on that. Introducing the godfather of building integration as we know it, Mr. Ed Merwin. But Vicon is just, they're on a roll. Niagara 4 open for innovation. Jenny Graves reformatted their marketing, and I think it's been incredibly successful. But basically, the Niagara 4 builds on the legacies of the Niagara framework in the new and exciting ways that become less reliant on browser plugins. It's faster and easier to use. It's truly an open framework. Delivers a variety of notable improvements that help businesses take full advantage of the Internet of Things, including advanced visualization, new search and security and navigation tools. And it's got a lot of the bells and whistles. It's got the powerful security. It has the all-new user interface that gives you, easier to use, friendlier. And then it has the data at the fingertips. So a lot of stuff is under the hood of Niagara 4 that you don't need to third-party things. You can bring them all out of your already paid for and already embedded features and benefits of the Niagara 4.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Roger Rebenack's the hardest working man in show business, I think Jenny Graves might be the hardest working woman. And I tell you, there's only one thing I don't like about Jenny Graves.
And careful.
It's just she works so hard. We don't get to spend enough time with her. I tell you what, she's awesome. She is one of the coolest people in our industry. And Kenny, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that she is on the nomination ballot for the Control Trends Woman of the Year. So again, I echo what you're saying about Vicon. I think it's one of the really, really, we would not have the industry the way it is now if it hadn't been for Tritium and Vicon. So special shout out to those guys. And, with that, Kenny Smyers, I think we should talk a minute about the Control Trends ballot again, and specifically the Woman of the Year. And mm-hmm. So if you know an awesome woman that is not on the Control Trends nomination ballot right now, please add her into other. And this category does not necessarily mean they have to be executives, although we do have some executives on there. They don't have to be in sales. They don't even have to be in management. We got tons of incredible women that are making a difference in our industry, everything from sales to customer support. So please, 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 let's reach out and let's acknowledge the great women in our industry.
Well said. Well said. And that's another exciting thing, just to kind of, you know, put a period at the end of the Control Trends nomination issues is that what happens is this thing catches fire. Like you say, I think what you were saying at the very beginning of the show was that there wasn't a big hurry to get involved like there was the previous 4 years. It's been kind of a slow start, but the slow start's now turning into a very strong, sustained interest now, because I think everybody was just kind of slow to get started. But what's happening is the people that did react first and got involved first are really bringing in a whole new perspective, you know, and we're really learning about things that are going to become more and more important, because we would miss those ordinarily because, you know, the big strong performers always seem to be, you know, they get up front and they block the light. They're so big and strong that they actually, you know, kind of command the, you know, center stage, where their absence now allows a lot of really, really cool people that are really good at a lot of things to take advantage of that opportunity, you know, that conspicuous absence.
Well, hey, listen, talking about great women, let's bring our first guest on. She looks like she's teed up and ready to go, Kenny. And she is Ken Sinclair's nominee for the Control Trends Woman of the Year, and with good reason. So how about introducing Therese Sullivan?
I'd love to, Eric. We've known Therese Sullivan for, I think 4 years now. But she caught our attention back with the Silicon Valley stuff. You know, we were watching this contextualization take place, and I don't think we really understood it fully, what it meant to the industry and what it meant, what the smart, what smart devices meant, you know, and how things were being, there was so much information that was available by the technology that people were actually bringing along with them, telephones, smart pads, whatever. And Therese really went into that deep and defined that. We got involved with Therese too, with recapping RealCom, IBCons. She was, she's from California. She knows it, but she actually has a background in like four industries. Very, very, intelligent and well-experienced woman that understands what drives things, but from the Silicon Valley perspective. So she is the owner editor of buildingcontext.me. That's at buildingcontext.me is a website that has an incredible, archive of intelligent writing about smart buildings, about, you know, what the future of IoT is. And most importantly, Teresa's interests are in this, what's going to happen if we lose control of we fought the proprietary wars down at the network level, the building level, and now we have a potential disaster occurring up in the cloud. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Therese Sullivan.
Welcome, Therese.
Hello. Hello from California.
Welcome.
Therese, you're like you say, you and Josh Bradshaw are our eyes and ears in the valley. And we can't tell you how much we appreciate, in our Control Trends community appreciate you taking some time to come on and talk to us. And I don't know whether you've caught it yet or not, but we have a new category in the Control Trends Awards, which is the Control Trends Woman of the Year. And Ken Sinclair has you on the nomination ballot. So I tell you what, I'd be lying if I didn't say you wouldn't be a great choice. So first of all, congratulations.
I didn't even know that. Okay, it was like waking up to balloons on my smartphone, because he used my own little balloon diagram from the last article to say, "I'm trying to make you famous, Therese."
Well,
I have no idea. I guess I got to better book a ticket to Las Vegas.
You better be there. We want to have you there for sure. And you're like, we got so many incredible women in our industry. So on behalf of Control Trends and the Control Trends community, thank you very much for the contributions you make to our industry and educating us. So you're very much appreciated.
And thanks for this new category. You know, again, we know it's been the election. We know some of the women are feeling a little bit left out about everything that happened. And I like that you got the women of the year.
Well, perfect. Perfect.
You've got wonderful women in this industry.
Well, listen, I'd love to get your take. Kenny and I talked a little bit earlier in the show about will the election sort of affect, because whatever you can say about the Obama administration, in our opinion, it's been very, very good for energy conservation. Therefore, it's been very good for smart buildings and innovations. It's been very good to sort of spur people like Elon Musk on. We've just seen some tremendous changes, you know, regarding controls and sustainability. And just quick take, what do you think? Is that going to change at all, you think, with the new administration?
I think it's going to be kind of even, Stephen. I think that already in the industry, for how many years have we been saying it's not about the pennies, the 330, 300. It's not about the energy pennies on square footage, it's the productivity and better buildings. And so I think we flipped the as a marketing storyteller, and it's not a flip, but it's already been happening. Comfy, et cetera. The emphasis has been on people, value. And so there's a new guy in office who says he's a builder and he's all into real estate, and we have to improve our building stock. And that improvement also means energy efficiency. I always equate it back to the days of quality. Actually, one of my first jobs was with a magazine that did quality control. And Edwards Deming, so famous for the... And he was like, well, if we don't measure it, we can't manage it. I know we've heard that a million times, but it was true in quality. You have to listen to... he started quality circles. You have to listen to where the problems are. You have to work from the bottom up. And this energy thing too, just like in the days of quality, throwing away 5% scrap seems like, we can afford that. But what it meant is the scrap got into the real parts. It got put into the cars. Detroit lost to Japan based on quality. Same thing with buildings. I mean, there's no way a builder can walk away from what our industry is trying to do to remake our building stock. How about that answer?
That's a great answer, Teresa. Very, very good answer. So,
I don't think anyone's, I mean, that's what I'm going to watch is our national labs. I think the Lawrence Livermore is doing so much. The Pacific National Labs up in the Northwest are doing so much. Out of Golden, Colorado, NREL, I think those guys will march on and be funded by the government.
Well, very, very cool. Well, you know, and we talked a little bit off camera about, you know, because Ken and I are always talking about the British, the Silicon Valleys are coming, and talking a little bit off camera about, you know, it seems like they had a lot of funding where maybe some of the existing people in our industry are sort of in it on their own. Do you think at all, maybe the players will change at all or how they're funded?
Well, he said, I don't know, but I guess that the message I heard on Tuesday was from the middle of the country. And I was surprised to see Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania. But the message, and I was surprised because the data was so bad. How about that lesson in it?
I tell you what, if they'd had Alpert on the data, they would have gotten it right. They just need to listen to have our people do the data analytics, right?
Well, the models, I think that if any of you two have, I know you're big readers, but the black swan.
Yes.
The idea that the models are very imperfect, and in this case, our poll models were very imperfect. And Middle America told us that stop looking at your stop ignoring us as people and looking at your data models and watch what's really happening. And I think one of the other takes I listened to, I believe it was Michael Moore's movie. He's been given a lot of play on all the news channels and about Trump land. And those guys, I think he interviewed somebody from an auto parts store that said, well, I have to play with my money. And these elites are playing with other people's money.
That's well said.
And I can't let that go on anymore. And when you look in our industry and you see, you know, Google buy this little Nest company, which was already very well funded with other people's money, and then Google saying it's worth $3.2 billion, which was ridiculous and totally based on what the venture, when they do a transaction, the venture capitalists and the Treasury Department of Google, they get a percentage of the transaction. So it behooves them to have it really super high. So that's why it goes and it's $3.2 billion. And they're, but they're playing with other people's money. And then 2 years later, it's like, oh, you know, that guy, he wasn't really a very good manager. That product, yeah, we're shelving it. And nobody goes back, you know, and you think about that automaker in Trump land. Could he throw away through, could he make any little mistake?
Yeah.
And have people just forget about it? And so I think that is, I think we have to stop saying the high tech people are coming, that, you know, and then their data models are perfect. And if Tuesday taught us anything, it's they're not perfect. And maybe
well
he's playing with other people's money. I hope that guy in his auto store is heard, that that is very unfair.
Well, I tell you what, Teresa, I think you're definitely, I think this is a lesson for all the data analytics folks, right? Because we do a lot of data analytics. That's a big trend in our industry. And you said something very prophetic, I think, which is, yeah, pay attention to your data models, but also listen to people. So well right. said there.
And you guys, what you're doing with Control Trends, I mean, we're telling the story. We're letting people be heard because there aren't any journalists anymore. I mean, the Google, the Craigslist, et cetera, they knocked the supports out under the journalism industry and even the technology journalism industry. And you can't earn a middle-class income on talking about this stuff. No, so there's no coverage of our industry. There's no press people that come to the event because nobody can earn a living on that. All they can earn a living on is doing HubSpot, you know, create content that is sort of empty and is always sales, sales, sales. So if we got Luxter in the office, I think we kind of deserve it.
Well, I tell you what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you and Josh Bradshaw go get some venture capitalists in Silicon Valley to value buildingcontext.me and control trends and automatedbuildings.com for like $80 billion. And then after we're all rich, we can then talk about how wrong they were, right?
Well, yeah. Teresa, it's an amazing thing to just hear you talk. And again, like Eric said, I just want to remind everybody who we're talking with, Teresa Sullivan, who is a marketing partner expert, principal of buildingcontext.me. But you have over 350 articles in an archivable library that is incredible reads. But Teresa, we need to transition into something that I think is becoming a very, very important trend. You and Alper Alsmeiser from BASSG have got your finger on the pulse of what is going on in our industry now with IoT and everything's going on. You are giving out a caveat that you put in the automatedbuildings.com's November edition, where there's something else afoot here that we're responding to, but very slowly. Tell us about this take back the internet concept that you've came up with and how you now have pretty well targeted what might be the next battle after the controls industry finally got a hold of our networks and understood open protocols, and we've had BACnet and we've had the open frameworks, Niagara. We might be facing another serious perilous times. Tell us about that.
Well, yes. I mean, that series of articles, again, comes from a lot of talking and Alper's thinking. And we see it's this convergence of IT and OT. And I think everybody that listens to the show understands that's happening. And the IT players have had the open source, that article started with about really in enterprise IT, open source is used for more and more of their basic stack for managing the enterprise. You have, I put some links in there to all the open source companies, but Linux was open source and then that we got Red Hat and storage is all open source. So the SAPs and the Oracles that had them while the OT, while we've had kind of had our data locked in by our big building equipment makers, the enterprise has had their data locked in by these big SAPs, and they brought in consulting firms and set up their business processes. And we're at a moment with the cell phones and mobile technology where they're saying, let's take that back. Those that way of looking at our enterprise is Rube Goldberg right now. You know who else had just had a wonderful white paper come out is Sky Foundry, and saying the same thing, that we need open. We don't want to get locked in again, as Pete Townsend won't get fooled again.
There you go.
Think we should get fooled again either. We need to have open for the software stack. We need to have as much open source software in there as we can, and it's going to be hard on building owners and the project teams, the people that really have the building owner ears, what I think are often the energy management firms, the commissioning experts who are trying to take the side of the building owner when big retrofits get started and even in new construction. They've got to know not to give away the rights to their data to some one cloud vendor or another that's going to mind it for them, because they will eventually want that data. They will want to be able to mix and match their lighting data and their HVAC data and their occupancy data and occupancy feedback of how they felt about that data. And they want the trend data. They want the real-time data. It's quite a temptation to say, we don't have the people to manage it. We don't have the resources, you know, just take it away. But eventually you're going to want rights to that. And again, with my
Teresa, if I can interrupt, how do we protect ourselves? I mean, this is a great transition point. So we've identified a potential.
Back in the day of IT, that's how the Gartner Group got so big. It was actually, I think, their reports and their quadrants, but also advising clients, big clients, the Fortune 500, about service level agreements, SLAs, before they got into any deal with Oracle and SAP. Negotiations really went on about in with these service level agreements about who was going to own that data. And as Alper, and I wrote it in the article, but it was really Alper's thought, is it's not just the raw data, but if they're going to run algorithms against your data and come up with calculated values, well, you building owner, you also deserve a percentage of that value. That should not be invisible to you. And in order to get that, it's again, depend on the open source, look at their stack, and make sure that there's software development kits that will give you access to the programs and the languages that you probably will want to use, given the general market, Dart, C++, and so it's more than APIs. It's full software development kits, and it's getting in.
Well, your article goes into great depth about it. It says the file format should not be cryptic. The definitions need to be file format should be open source. For example, the open source for YAML and JSON. But if you using your the way you explained that we say the high techs are coming, Silicon Valley's coming, and Eric led the British are coming sort of thing, and it's a heads up thing. But is this the same thing with, I mean, how serious and how fast could something like this happen? Or is it like us tend to get excited real quick because of the potential there in reality, the Silicon Valleys can't come that quick because it's just it's too difficult and they don't understand our business. And even if they have all the money in the world, they're just going to fail again because they don't really understand the industry. How quickly can this threat develop where the cloud can have a lock-in? Is this slowly developing or is this already there? I mean, where are we in the terms of...
I mean, again, in this land of using other people's money, you have to promise future revenue streams. And that's just
good.
I laid it out in the article it's all there. Calculations of future revenue streams based on selling you back your data.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So
selling you back your data. Love that. Oh gosh, that's good.
Right. So they wouldn't be valued at what they were if they had to work like the auto parts dealer in Trumpland.
Here's another question for you, Therese, because, you know, in the age of open, right? So again, you get back to sort of business as we've always known it, which is you try to create a unique value proposition, which, you know, in building automation controls was having a proprietary protocol that maybe was better than everybody else's. And, you know, we pushed to open that up. So I want to put you on the other side of the equation. So now you are a business in the software or whatever, and you're trying to develop a product, but you can't do it open. And now you are being where you can't then make revenue on selling the data. Are we, if we push too hard, we can get to the point where nobody's wanting to develop products because they have no way to leverage their investments to get a return on it?
Well, I think it does be, and isn't this kind of what's happening all over, is it's learning to do more with less. Is, I think if you look at a company like Linux, that begot Red Hat, Red Hat makes its money on services around Linux. That's the end sentence of that article, Ken, about it's not simple. They want to make the end interface look super simple on your mobile. But this era of Internet of Things, especially in this transition time, in dealing with this challenge of trying to keep the data open, trying to hire the right people, trying to get the right contract, I think you should contract. You know, we're developing wonderful things that are needed, but get it in writing that you will have access to that data. And I actually have one. So I think it's about services around the data. But another super interesting, and I'm going to throw one at you because we haven't talked about this yet, is Toby Considine. You always have to read his stuff and what he's doing. And he's very into, it's transactive energy or transactive data, where those little sensor packs or edge devices like Alper's device, his edge analytics controller, eventually it's also going to have a little chip built in that will be able to do transactions. So you will be able to do machine-to-machine selling, the little cash register, if you will.
Nice.
Wow.
If you want to, you know, yes, whether it's a lighting control company or an HVAC company or who's ever saying, hey, we'll hold all your data, we'll calculate it, but then we intend to resell it in aggregate to other, you know, to Google, if you will, so they can do whatever Google does. And that's the machine learning part, too. The other reason you're going to need it is eventually, just like cars, we brought up Elon Musk, are going to autonomous operations. To get to use the AI algorithms that are being developed by companies like Google and Amazon, we're going to need a lot of training data, and that's going to come from our trend data over time. So if they want to sell that back to us, there will be transaction capability. And we had that conversation last time about Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, Bitcoin and maybe even the you know, Elon Musk and his, you know, his data, you know, data wall now, and now he's got the solar panels that can come in. And so now I'm living next door to you. I got some excess capacity. What I hear you saying is you get a device like Alper's, and now all of a sudden, if you need some excess capacity, we could have an agreement in advance and that transaction gets done. And again, it's getting back to this whole artificial intelligence sort of deal. And I could go on and on about where this could eventually lead, but it's cool stuff, Therese. It's really cool stuff.
And I think, get back to Pete Townsend, we won't get fooled again. I don't think we should get cut out of it. And can I say the election again? I think who's ever holding the bag, like betting on their data algorithms because they think that they know so much more and they cannot listen to the people close down, they're going to be without the input of our industry, those algorithms are not going to be very good.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, Therese, listen, we're kind of up against it a little bit, but I did want to shift gears real quick. You mentioned Alper a couple of times, and I want to give you a chance to get on the political trail a little bit here and do a little campaigning. You do a lot of work with Alper, and tell me, if you would, about Alper and what people should know about him. He's up for several awards. His company's up for some awards with his Edge Devices Innovative Product of the Year. Let's hear what you have to say about Alper.
Alper is, we brought it up already, he's been partner to so many companies that are the missing piece in this convergence of IT to OT, the missing piece of DevOps, of helping people who are commissioning and energy managers and maybe a little bit closer to the customer, supplying them with, it began with like dashboarding capabilities, the graphics, that's why BASSD is services and graphics, to make visualizations. Then eventually it was the special programming that you need to do for integrations, for data integrations, expert in, and he and his team, he's really got a great group in Austin, and then he's got international teams that, when you've got a big integration to do and you need some, a group that just specializes in languages like Axon, which is really super important to a lot of the analytics, Alper's team can do that. So it's just as these needs, as this convergence happened and these needs cropped up, that our control contractors needed to become software developers, in effect. We need to give our customer, I like the way Altura used to say, and I'm sure they still do, before we leave a building, we've got to write the manual. And so you need and the manual is happening in on software with these mobile apps. You need to become app developers to satisfy your customer. And it's Alper that's helped make those kind of people, let's say controls contractors, make the transition for them to become app developers.
Well, there you
and
go.
It's so cool. And I don't see anyone else in our industry doing that.
Well, I tell you what, he's a cool guy. Kenny and I really like him a lot. He's a sponsor of the Control Trends Awards and, just an innovative, cool guy. Therese, I tell you what, we're up against it time-wise, but as always, thank you so much. Your insights are invaluable. Therese Sullivan, buildingcontext.me. You got to check her out. You can also find her on Ken Sinclair's automatedbuildings.com. And of course, you can find her on your 2016 nomination ballot for the Control Trends Awards under the Control Trends Woman of the Year. Therese, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Therese. Thank
you. Yeah.
All right, Kenny, as usual, great stuff from Therese Sullivan. I tell you what, dude, without further ado, we had some pretty good posts this week. Tell us what we had up first, buddy.
We sure did. EZIO Europe CPT and EasyStack training sessions coming up. I was fortunate that I got enough time to update Ken's calendar and got these things up in the proper arrangement and sequence. So October gone. November is already halfway gone. It's an amazing thing. But EZIO, the testament to their global presence, they have two major trainings coming up in November, the 28th and 29th of November, and the 30th and 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of first and 2nd of December. And these will be in the Holland location. Please refer to the post. But they're going to go into the deep dive into the CP tool and EZIO FG training.
I tell you what, man, that EZIO, the beast from the east, just keeps rocking and rolling. And Mike Marston will be a guest presenter along with Roger Rebenak for the PID award at this year's Control Trends Awards. And get those two guys on stage at the same time. Watch out.
Some formidable executives there, I'll tell you.
What's next, big guy?
Well, the next one, again, is, like you said, bread and butter post. This was another webinar that this past Thursday, November 10th, 2016. It was 10 o'clock. Pacific Daylight Time. And what this did was this, to your, earlier statements about, this disruption is causing a lot of concern for people. And one of the areas that are enormously impact is the real estate business. So Yardi, who we've met Mr. Yardi several times at RealCom, and we were back there with the company, the chiller experts that got bought out. Let's see.
Scott.
Trivia question. Scott.
Duncan. And, the Duncanator.
Nice. Well, I'll tell you what, well done. But anyhow, professional investors are worried about 2016. And you know, this been little to allay their fears. The cycle hit a slowdown and a lot of questions emerged. And they had two formidable experts, Jeff Adler, Vice President of Yardi Matrix, and also Jack Kern, the Director of Institutional Research. And these guys, just like that Johnson ABCS meeting we went to, where we left feeling optimistic. We left feeling that we were coming, that the pendulum was swinging back in our favor economically, and that the next trouble spot's going to be up around 2028, 2030. And this guy said, save your money because cash is going to get really, really scarce right about then. But these guys said that there's a lot of real reasons for optimism. And so they put on a great seminar. Hopefully, if you signed up for it, you'll be able to archive it if you weren't able to attend it. But they did a U.S. global macroeconomic forecast, talked about the capital markets, leading demographic trends. But for me, the most important thing, and for us, was what is going to happen to buildings and where they're going to put their dollars to, build new, renovate, whatever. So they actually had a section on there talking about, controlling their building, greater efficiencies that are available, and putting IoT to use. So it's a great seminar.
Very, very, very cool, Kenny. And then, not to be outdone, tell us about what CoreTech came up with, Big Dog.
Well, there we go. It's a kind of a sequence here. That's why they showed up kind of together there. Realcomm and Jim Young, Howard Berger, and the great folks they've got on staff there also have a second major meeting every year. It's called CoreTech. So this year, CoreTech 2016 will be held in New York, at 28 Liberty, New York, New York, the 16th through the 17th. And would they have some cool stuff? There was an early bird special that unfortunately has expired. But this thing's really focusing. CoreTech educational programs are designed to give corporate real estate directors, CIOs, facility managers, building engineers, energy and sustainability executives, portfolio managers, and asset managers the technology tools to give them the hands-on case studies, to give them hands-on testimony that can help them positively impact the bottom line of their companies. And basically, it's automating processes, using technology to get greater value outputs for real estate organizations and make their buildings smarter, more intelligent, and more connected. So it's always been a good stuff. I hope they do well. A lot going on, and New York's a place, one of the great places to go to. So it might be a little chilly.
What, Kenny, and it might be a little bit chilly, but we'd be remiss if we didn't point out that Lisa Woods from Realcomm Omicron has been nominated multiple times for the Control Trends Woman of the Year. So she's on the ballot there, as well as Darlene Pope from Jones Lang LaSalle. So if you see one of those girls, let them know, or those women, let them know that they're on the ballot. If you like them, vote for them. But, again, two incredible women that make a huge difference in our industry, Kenny Smyers.
Yeah, and again, this is just great. The young guns, and now some really good, strong focus on the impacts made by the women and the continued need for their presence, a greater presence, because as we begin to feel the pressures of losing a lot of our workforce, a lot of executives, a lot of customer service, a lot of technicians are leaving the controls industry. The HVAC industry, the fastest growing industry in North America, is losing. It's a terrible thing to realize. But so we're going to see some interesting things develop, and women are going to play a great big part
in
that.
Well, they are. And that's one of the themes in 2016 when we do the end of the year show, that we'll hit the highlights. But 2016 will also be known for one momentous event. And this might be the capstone event of 2016 because Ken Smyers, the man, the myth, the legend, made his acting debut in a short film about flame safety. So Kenny, tell us a little bit about that. You played the insurance adjuster, and I must say you did a marvelous, marvelous job.
Well, let's just talk about, serendipity and things hatching from a conversation at a table. The way I remember this happening is I was sitting next to you and you said you had a good idea and you talked to Jim Heyman. And next thing I know, we were standing up in a boiler room and you were giving everybody their motivation. You were telling the guy, okay, this is what I want you to say, do, and whatever, and how I want you to feel. So you talk about original first run additions as directors. That was your first debut as a director, wasn't it? Where you were actually had... 15 people around telling, you know, lights.
Telling them what to do. Well, I think I got three ex-wives that would disagree about me, my first directing role, but it was fun, right?
It was. Well, the thing about it was, is we came up, CGNA, of course, is Controls Group North America. There are 42 or 43 of the top distributors in the country, in North America too. So, I mean, you're talking Canadian, North American, you know, United States. And I believe we're going to, pretty soon we'll be seeing some other area representations. But it's kind of interesting. But basically, these are your cornerstone, your brick and mortar distributors that really and truly have had the experience and watched the industry grow, watched the industry evolve. And what we're seeing now is that in certain areas like Flame Safeguard, we've seen a propensity to use rebuilt controls. And the so you came up with an idea of how to make some a story to convey to people how
penny what wise happens. And pound foolish, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what you said. You saying that you've heard penny wise, pound foolish, that you mean make decisions to save a small amount of money, pennies that wind up making bad sense for affecting larger amounts of money and potential liability. So why don't you tell us what your sentiments were when you came up with that?
Well, so, you know, we talked a little bit about, touched a little bit on it last week, Kenny, on the show, and you know, and we're all pushed to be more profitable. I mean, it's one of the, you know, just the things that we're dealing with in our society. And in many cases, I advocate that, right? You know, there are companies like ISA that rebuild legacy controls and stuff like that. But the Flame Safeguard, when we talk about Flame Safeguard, we're talking about controls that go on boilers and burners, things that can explode, okay? And, you know, there's been, in my opinion, an absolute misinformation going around, right? There are a couple of companies that will rebuild these things, and they say, well, we got $2 million worth of insurance. And I think what happens is a lot of these purchasing agents are, you know, they're pushed to save money. They go online. They say, well, why would I spend X amount of dollars for a Honeywell control or a FireEye control or a Siemens control where I could spend $150 or $100 for one of these rebuilt controls, right? And I think it puts the maintenance guys, the people that actually work on it, in a real bind because they know about the insurance and the codes and stuff like that. So two things happen. Number one, as you so eloquently point out, most insurance like IRI and FM do not recognize rebuild controls as being valid, right? So the potential situation you can see in the movie is your purchasing guy buys a boiler control, rebuilt boiler control, because he saves some money or she saves some money, which is what they're supposed to do. The maintenance guy puts it in. There's an explosion, and then the insurance company comes in and they go, wait a minute, that's a rebuilt control. You're not insured. And so it becomes a liability issue. And like we know in our particular culture, a lot of times people can point fingers. So our friend Dominique, who played the boiler guy who knew better and put the control in, winds up getting stuck there. So again, you know, I think part of what we got to do, Kenny, is we got to let people know where, when it makes sense to save money, you definitely do that. But on boiler controls, it's a litigious event. So you want to stay out of that. So that's one. Two, the other thing is if you get a Honeywell or a FireEye or a Siemens control, you get a brand new control. All the components are the same, right? So, I mean, you know, all new. Where with a rebuild control, if a relay is worn out, they might just replace that relay. So not all the parts get replaced. They're fixing it as inexpensively as possible. So over the course of what a new relay might last, you might replace it with three or four rebuilt relays while at the same time assuming that liability. And then the final thing that sort of really irks me as a full service distributor, and the CGNA distributors are, by the way, they are all bona fide. They're not going to steer you wrong when it comes to flame safety. They all got trained people. They've got test boards. They can really, you know, tell you what's what regarding Flame Safeguard. But as we said last week, you know, as a Flame Safeguard distributor, you're lucky if you're making 20-25% margin on this inventory that you're stocking on these, you know, experts that are factory trained to make sure you stay safe. Whereas somebody selling one of these rebuild controls, even though you might be saving money, they're making, you know, could be making 100, 200, 300, 400% selling these rebuild controls. And so my question for you as a buyer, who's really screwing you over here, right? What do I have to say about that, Kenny? What do you think?
Well, it's a sensitive subject. And again, you know, we're not doing...
How was that with my sensitivity? Was I politically correct on that?
I think you were pretty heavy-handed in one direction. I think you were voting that the you don't take any chances. You don't take a one out of a thousand, one out of a million.
Not when your kids are going to a school.
Exactly. So, right? So I think what we're talking, we all make the assumption that these bridges are been evaluated for their load bearing strength, and it can withstand a traffic jam of 2,000 cars on them. But you know, in reality, a lot of times people are holding their breath because they don't know. And when you do know, when you have a chance to make a decision that involves the public at large, you have a responsibility to make their safety first and foremost. So, you know, without saying again doomsday stuff, and because you know that's a horrible way to sell. But the reality is that there's some pretty shaky things going on. People are using eBay, not just the rebuilders. I mean, people really don't understand. So these buyers that think that they've saved, you know, they get an estimate and it says $1,200, and they can go on eBay and buy something that looks new or whatever for $250. We're seeing more and more of this kind of a solution thing, and it's just getting scary because that's how things happen. You know, when you lower your standards and when you lower your guard and you don't trust your people. The moral of the story there was that that service guy, and they did a great job. Even Scott Cross coming in here at the end as the sheriff that's going to take him to jail says, you know, it's regrettable that it happened, but who did it? Who put it in? Who was the last guy to put the screws on the terminal boards and then try to start the system up? And then everybody that's in that building assumes that they've got, you know, top-notch, equipment that we're maintaining all the safety standards and all stuff. And then, you know, it's kind of an interesting parable. I think it was a pretty interesting idea how it came together, because what this video did was, how long did it take? About 45 minutes, an hour? And then you had to do the editing.
Yeah, about an hour and then a lot of editing. But, you know, again, you know, congratulations to Jim Heyman and Dominic and everybody else that was in it, because, you know, it's amazing what a video camera and three cocktails in the boiler room, what you can come up with, right?
Yeah, you can't see the beer glasses on top of the shelves, so we did a good job of putting those out of the way. But again, not to overdo it, because like we say, we know there's times where the only solution to get your building back up and get it in line with the fire codes or whatever is to get something repaired. But even that needs to be done through an authorized person that understands the UL requirements, that really truly believes in what they do, and then puts they warranty it for a year. And that's a different story that we're talking. Yeah. We're talking about rebuild controls where they're blowing
on your boiler, on your boilers. And listen, you know, just reach out. There's a link to the authorized CG&A distributors. If you have any questions about it, just reach out to one of those guys. Kenny and I can uncategorically say that they'll steer you right regarding boiler controls for sure. And if you want to save money, Kenny, Honeywell is going to help you out there. They're going to give you a discount on your Niagara 4 certification training. So, you know, that's where you save your money, right, big dog?
Well, they're going to call you the Segway Master. There, that was real nice. Well, you know, we talked about the sponsor being Vicon at Niagara, and we talked about Tritium just being, you know, probably one of the most profound impacts in modern HVAC and building automation. The Niagara framework still continues to be the leading framework that has taken all of us from disparate protocols and being locked out and being forced to deal with one person, and putting that JSON on a building and using the Niagara framework has made life very, very easy and not easy necessarily because it's easy to do, but easy because now you're not hemorrhaged by single soil selection and over a barrel when you need good service and good pricing and competition. So Honeywell now is taking this to the level. You know, as we all know, Honeywell is huge, has a huge installed base and has a huge two-step distribution program, maybe the largest in the world. Certainly up there in the top three. I'm sure Johnson's is big and Siemens has a big one coming. And of course, Schneider Electric does. But there's a lot of people out there that have an opportunity here, because Honeywell is offering a 50% discount to authorized systems distributors towards the Niagara 4 certification training. Now, this is not the Webb's N4 crossover training. So when you as a contractor are working closely with your distributor, your authorized systems distributor, and you do over 60K of Webb's integration products, you get a 50% discount on probably about a $5,000 certification course that is not the N4 crossover training. It is the actual AX, the replacement or the superseding certification to the AX certification, which is now called the Webb's N4 certification training. So I think it's a great, great big carrot. And I think Honeywell is getting back, into the limelight with, spurring the economic investments. You know, everybody needs to, you know, a good attention getting shove to get their hands wet again. But a lot of people seem to be kind of slow to react to that transition going from AX to N4. I mean, a lot. Maybe there was an assumption made that, you know, people would take advantage of all these new features and benefits, the security, and just trend would be to go forward at the earliest opportunity. We're seeing a lot of people that are not jumping that chasm. They're waiting. And the point is that all these opportunities are going to pass you by. And then when you do make a decision to upgrade from an AX, networked all your JSONs, if you don't bring them up to speed now and do it incrementally, that jump, when you do decide to do it, to go to the advanced versions of Niagara 4, is going to be a very, very, it's going to be more expensive. Let's just put it that way. As a matter of fact, it's going to cost you more money. So, chip away at it, make room in your budget to get your people N4 certified, and then start making all purchases in N4, and then start upgrading your AX versions up to Niagara 4, and you'll be in good shape for the next 10, 15 years.
Well said. And Kenny, man, you're putting the how-to videos up on how to hack things. So, man, dude, I tell you what, are you an enabler?
No, I'll tell you what, I'm scared to death there because, I just wait to, like this guy here showed how he took control of an Android camera, and I always think, imagine I'm doing something that I think I'm happy and dumb, and here somebody's turned my camera on, or my kids or my wife, or, we're in a car and we're driving and people can turn your phone on and record it. So this gentleman here is a true expert. He's like Fred Gordy. From the UK. He is an extremely intelligent guy. He's been on, what caught my attention, he was on TED Talks. I watch a lot of TED Talks, and I think that's a great way to get yourself caught up to something. If you don't have time to read a book, you don't have time to, sit down, or you just don't have time and you need to get an update and learn something in 20 to 30, 40 minutes. I think TED Talks are all 20 minutes or less, but this guy is a self-professed massive geek. And he's a technical expert, but he has really gotten, this is old too. This is March 17th, 2015. So this is a year and a half old, but he's talking about how he can hack internet connected CCTVs and Android powered phones with staggeringly simple methods. And he actually demonstrates it. So we're not trying to encourage people hacking. We're trying to get people under the, break that little bubble of naivety and realize that you could easily be hacked, especially if you're out there using wireless in a main, airport, libraries, shopping centers. He just says he's a big believer. The biggest problem with security is making it accessible and interesting to those outside the security industry. So as a result, he takes every opportunity to educate security threats and best practices, featuring demonstrations and showing how the cyber criminals do it. So again, he's been given multiple TED Talks. He's appeared on national television programs to educate the public, including CNN, NBC, BBC News, and Bill Maher's show. So he's a spokesperson for the industry, a very, very bright guy. And of course, his company, Sophos, is a global powerhouse in cybersecurity.
It's funny, Kenny, because when we had that group, Fred Brody, Gordy brought the group of the cybersecurity people that have the meetups in. None of them would use our wireless network. They all had their own little wireless network things, which is kind of interesting. But hey, what else is really interesting? And by the way, I think like we've been preaching, cybersecurity is just a sign of the times. And of course, the thing is, the times they are changing, right? And Ken Sinclair, Bob Dylan, man, two of the great prolific folks in our industry, right? In terms of calling them how they see them. And we had a classic rewind of our friend, Ken Sinclair, the owner editor of automatedbuildings.com. And, it was a great interview we did with him a couple weeks ago. And it just, you just get to hear Ken talking on this. And any more thoughts about what Ken had to say on that show?
Well, I think it was an first of all, again, we really enjoy working with Ken because he spends an inordinate amount of time keeping HEP. You know, for a guy that has 50 years of experience, he's not tired in any way, shape, or form. And the post itself has got a bunch of comments on it. And, you know, and people say that they love the Bob reference and the title. Thank you for the post. But, you know, they know that Ken St. Clair is a pivot point. He's a portal for information. And we got a question about the AHR show and the highlight sessions. And we'll get that to you as soon as we get the opportunity. But the thing what Ken's doing now is he's linking you know, all the people in the business. Like we had Tree Sullivan on. And a very bright person that really and truly understands what's going on and helps put that in layman's terms so we can understand it. And I think that's what Ken St. Clair is very, very awesome, is he takes these difficult to understand concepts and he makes them, he humanizes them, he puts them in our level of perspective so we can understand what that means and the impact. And what he's saying, again, with this automated learning, self-machine learning, you know, and how it's going to affect the BS world is that we've got a lot of technology that's looking at how it can penetrate the building automation space, how they can take things and less is more, open is better. So he's seeing how these layers of this disruptive technology are laying down on top of each other, and he's telling us to watch out and to get on board so that we can start to assimilate this information and this technology into our building space now before we have, you know, one of the big dogs like Intel or Dell or whoever, IBM, who really has the deep pockets and has another, you know, avenue into that building space. It might be the routers, might be something else. But once they get in there, they're going to know how to do what we do. And the horrible thing might be they might do it better and cheaper at the building level, but then take control of it in the cloud where we all lose it again. Then they provide a, you know, a single service up in the cloud that you can't, there's no negotiations. If they got your information or data, they could hold you hostage to it. And that's, I think that's the big thing that Ken's warning us about, that Teresa's warning us about, that Alper Alsmeiser's warning us about, that, you know, it looks good, but beware. And if we don't have, if you don't go up asking questions on how your data is going to be archived and how much access you're going to have to your own data, then you could be missing a very important aspect of the technology that looks looks better than it might be in the long run. So
well, it's very interesting. I think we could be talking about a new form of slavery here. And I tell you what, Kenny, I don't know about you, but have you ever read virtually every piece of software I have now? You know, you have to agree to their terms. And if you ever read their terms, it is unbelievable what you're giving them the right to do with your data. I mean, you know, and if you don't agree to them, you don't get the software. It's awful, man. That's big business. So, you know, it's like, I think it could be a new form of slavery here, and I think we need to be aware of it. I'm not sure there's anything we can do about it, but it starts with awareness. So,
well, the Future Crime book, I got it with me right here. In fact, I was just reading it again, and of course, you know, the famous things they talk about there is the kid who was a hockey star locally, and one of the photographers took a picture of him, and the next thing you know, the kid's like basically on the front of a cereal box or something. He's being, you know, his face is being used in much larger capacity than the parents ever intended. And they were thinking that they should be economically compensated for, you know. And then the guy says, oh, no, take a look at your contract. You agree that any picture I take is mine. It's not yours. And the thing about the internet, and it's so true, and I'm guilty as charged. That's what I'm saying when you talk about CCTVs and getting hacked and everything. Again, we're all just pretty much single soldiers when it comes to that. And we rely on the larger, the governments. We rely on the agencies. We rely on the cloud providers. We rely on people. We rely on Apple. We rely on Samsung to you know, as long as we keep our stuff updated, we're supposed to be protected from a lot of the stuff. They're supposed to make it very hard. And that's also in this that CCTV video, is that if you keep your stuff upgraded and you change your passwords and make them tougher, you're probably not going to get hit, because it's just one of these robotrons that are just going on and on and on. Using, he showed where they use I think it was, what was it, 25,000 passwords a minute or something, or you know, some extraordinary thing. It just guesses and guesses and guesses until it finally gets a lock. And they use the default IP addresses to get, you know, that's what they're attracted to. So the people that have, you know, the people that manufacture different components put the IP addresses on their website and whatever. Shonan goes out and finds them, or one of the other people go out and find them, and then they start hacking those known IP addresses. So
Well, Kenny Smyers, I tell you what, man, it's something we'll keep tracking that, but we are going to have to hop off here. It's been another week of Control Talk Now, your smart buildings video cast and podcast with the man, the myth, the legend, and his sidekick, which is me. Special thanks to our sponsors this week, DG Logic, and who's our other sponsor, Kenny?
Vicon.
Oh, special thanks to our sponsors this week, DG Logic and Vicon, and our guest this week, Therese Sullivan. So with that, remember, be bold and stay in control. We'll see you next week.
Indeed, Eric.
Indeed, Kenny Smyers. Hey, you were starting. You're starting to get a little fun.
That was good. How long was it? It's...